Hey, Dave Bartu here, the College Football Matrix, talking a little bit of pace of play. I thought this was somewhat of a dead subject last summer. Last I'd heard of it was in July when Coach Bielema had brought it up and died down rather quickly, but man, did it not take too long to get it revved back up this month, February 2014. I was really excited when this proposal was announced because I wanted to see the data set. I wanted to see the results, how many plays, how much time, how much effort went into breaking down individually, play by play, working with all of these schools to analyze the injuries, pre-existing, in-game, in-practice. I mean, you're talking about hundreds of thousands of plays and tens of thousands of hours of research to go through all of this and try to come up with a conclusion that was statistically valid. My assumption was they could do a lot of research on it, but to break it down, because injury occurrence is so infrequent compared to the number of plays, and it would be so difficult to pin it to one specific defensive or offensive scheme, that I didn't think it would be conclusive. So I was really excited to see that. And so, yes, I was disappointed that there was nothing there to substantiate making such a change that would affect college football game and clock management. On the flip side, because there was nothing there, it gave me the opportunity to do what I love to do. And that's take information that's available to anybody and try to see if it could make sense in terms of supporting or not supporting this rule proposal. Now, keep in mind that this is absolutely not scientific. As I'd mentioned just a second ago, to do this research, it would take tens of thousands of hours. And I really feel that it would likely be very inconclusive in its nature. So, not trying to prove or disprove anything. What I do want to do, like I always do, is give information. Try to take what's available, bring it together, present it so that it's simple, it's understandable, and gives college football fans something to think about, a perspective that nobody else is providing. Whether it's right or wrong, that's not what I'm looking for. What I want to do is give that information to everybody, and then you decide. When you get to the bottom of this, my opinion does not matter. What matters is your opinion and how you use this information as a college football fan. Okay, so let's jump into this. Page 3, the first thing that I did, because rather than trying to do a ton of work, I just wanted to take a simple sample size of information and say, hey, where is this taking me? So I looked at 2012. We have the approximate number of starts lost to injury. Now keep in mind, no idea where these injuries came from. Pre-existing from high school, practice, weight room, in-game, you name it. It could have come from anywhere, okay? So the numbers of starts lost to game injuries is likely much lower. But we also have the number of snaps in a season by any team, which we can turn into any conference, both offensively and faced on defense. So when you look at this chart, you can see the big five conferences and then our number of starts lost on offense. You also have starts lost on defense. You have total plays run. Now each of these conferences, they have different number of teams. So you can see the SEC ran the most plays. It also has, at that time in 2012, the most teams, the most bowl appearances. So they have much higher play count than any of the other conferences. The big number to me is you go all the way across in the red and green, because this highlights the average number of plays faced in a game by an offense and a defense and the average loss of a start per play. Because if you simply look at the plays and the injuries, you can say, well, shoot, look at the Big 12, 138 injuries or starts lost to injury. The SEC has 289. It's a huge difference, but the SEC had two more teams. They had 14 teams in 2012. And so their numbers are much different than everybody else. So we need to bury it down into by game, by play. So with this rule, one of the assumptions before you even look at the data, you're going to say, okay, the teams or the conferences with the fewest number of plays should have A, the fewest numbers of injuries, and likely as much or fewer starts lost to injury per play. But you can look at these numbers here. It is exactly the opposite of that. The Big 12 and the Pac-12, both conferences easily ran and faced on defense more plays per game than the other three conferences. On the flip side, you have the SEC and the Big Ten ran the fewest and faced the fewest plays per game on average in 2012. Now, their injury, their start loss per play was number one and number two. Even though they're running and facing the fewest number of plays in a game per team, and the Big 12 and the Pac-12 running the most had the least number of starts lost per play. That right there tells me I got to do some more research on this, because these numbers are exactly opposite of what you would expect from increased pace of play and increased injuries. So now on page 4, you have the information from 2012. You have all of that injury information and 2009 through 2011. So to me, I wanted to focus on the columns in the far right-hand side. These break down the totals over 4 years, because maybe 2012 was a bit of an anomaly. Maybe that was the odd guy out, the outlier in 4 years. But if you go down and you go right down to the bottom right-hand corner, we're basically right back where we started. Conference with the least number of plays faced and run per game, SEC. Conference with the most, the Big 12. And it's not even a close number. You're talking over 10 plays per game, every game per team for an entire season. That is a lot more plays. And then you go down even farther and you look at the number of starts lost to injury per play for the SEC. It's nearly double the rate of the Big 12. Now, granted, you know, you could say, hey, they ran 6,000 more plays, but we're talking about starts lost per play. If you want to break it down, one of the arguments I've been hearing, well, if you run less plays, it should equal less injuries. Well, for the SEC at this injury rate to equal the Big 12, from 2009 to 2012, they would have had to run a play every 44 and a half seconds. If you say, okay, if there's transitive math saying, hey, if we're going to slow it down, it's going to equal less injuries, to get their ratio down to the Big 12, they would have to run one play of game clock every 44 and a half seconds. Conversely, the Big 12, if you wanted them to possibly catch up to the SEC while having the same amount of game time based on their injury rate, they would have to run a play every 12 and a half seconds of game clock for 4 years for every game. So that's not realistic. And so, like I said, it's not proving or disproving anything, but when you look at these numbers, 4 years, you are talking 450,000 plus plays run and defended. And these are the metrics that you come up with. You tell me what you think of that. Page 5 is really just some notes that I took on observations from the page 4 data. You can go through it bullet point by bullet point. You can pause this right now and just kind of look at all of the numbers. These are the things I gleaned from it. There may be more information there that you see that I haven't captured, but I tried to pull out the information as it pertained to this rule proposal. On page 6, this is an idea that presented itself when I was reviewing the data. One of the cool things about doing this is you just never know what you're going to get sometimes. Because you go into it saying, okay, I have this data set, and this is the idea that I have, and here are my expectations, or here's my idea, and this is what, for example, the rule proposal is. This is what we would expect it to look like. But every once in a while, something pops up that makes you go, maybe we're looking at the wrong thing. Maybe it's something else. And hundreds of years ago, I think 500 years ago, something like that, Isaac Newton gave us force equals mass times acceleration. Basically, the force of something hitting you equals its mass times acceleration. So if you get hit in the face with Randy Johnson fastball at 100 miles an hour with a baseball, its weight times that velocity, that's the force of it hitting you right in the face. Now, if he could pick up a 12-pound bowling ball and throw it 100 miles an hour, the force that it's going to hit you in your face with is going to be significantly greater because the velocities are equal, but the masses are very different. So, you could apply the same thing to college football or NFL football. The bigger the mass, the faster it's going, the greater the force. So, if you have two guys that are 250 pounds, both super athletes, both hitting each other hard, the force of that collision is going to be much greater than two guys at 220, or the same two guys that are running slower. So, the bigger and faster the athletes that you have on your team, the more damage they can either do to yourself in practice or to other teams in a game. And when you look at the numbers, it matches up some interesting things. From 2009 to 2012, and we already established that there is an order of ranking in terms of starts lost to injury per play. SEC is number one, all the way down to number five ranking Big 12. The teams that play the fastest to slowest, also the same exact number. 1 through 5. Now, here is where I found it to get very interesting, because I also have all of the rosters that were publicly available, and those rosters have heights and weights of all the players, and when you take the average weight of each player in 2009, 10, 11, and 12 for each of these conferences, the same exact ranking occurs. So the SEC with the highest rate of starts lost to injury per play, with the slowest rate of play on offense and defense, in the Big Five conferences, also, and I know you're not surprised, has the largest average size player. Next, the Big Ten, ACC, Pac-12, Big 12. So the Big 12, running the fastest in terms of pace of play, they also have the lowest injury rate, starts lost to injury, per play, but they are also the lightest team of these five conferences. Now, as you go down American Conference, then you go Conference USA, Sun Belt, boom, 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 Division II, Division III. Guess what? The average guy is going to get lighter and lighter and lighter. You know, if you're in the Sun Belt and you had to play 8 SEC teams along with your non-conference schedule, what do you think the injury rate for Louisiana Lafayette's going to be if they have to play everybody in the SEC West plus Vanderbilt and Missouri? Probably not going to be so good. So, maybe one of the things that we should be looking at is the size of the guys that are playing and the speed. If we're talking a safety issue, that is something that to me seems very real within the numbers. Here's where it could be fascinating, again, my opinion. But the SEC, we know on average, biggest, fastest guys in college football, they're talking about doing what? Going to a 9th conference game. What these numbers are saying right now to me is the assumption would be if they go to that 9th conference game, that's an extra game of pounding those bodies take, I would expect the amount of injuries and the injury rate per play in the SEC to go up. Now, if they added 10, 11, 12 conference games, every time they add that game, they're adding a bigger, faster, stronger team instead of a non-conference game. And to me, that creates, it's telling me that's going to create more injuries per play. I can't imagine how many more injuries we will have in 2014 with 15 games to win a national title when just a couple decades ago it only took 10 or 11. Now let's shift some gears. I'm going to go into third gear here and we're going to talk about just some ideas. One of the thoughts that the Rules Committee threw out when they disclosed this proposal was that the number of times a play gets off with less than 10 seconds gone on the play clock is not a high number. But here's the thing. It is a number. And nobody's really talked about what that could mean. Now, I started thinking, and right now, if you're with me, you're on page 7, started thinking about, well, what could be lost? Because he's really right. There's not a whole lot that can be run in that 10-second period. Well, what could we lose? Or not less necessarily we as fans, but what could a coach lose? Well, you're going to lose dives, quarterback sneaks, calling two plays in the huddle and saying, hey, third and one inside our opponent's 50. If we don't get it, bam, we're coming right to the line. We're all right here. Wah! And we're going to push it right through. We're going to move the chains quickly. Catch them a little by surprise. Don't give them a chance to rest. Don't give them a chance to call their defense and fill gaps. And just hit them for that 1 yard. Keep moving that chains. Hit them on fourth down when you're going for a touchdown, when you're going for an upset. And it's like, well, how frequent does that happen? Well, I got the numbers for you. I know. You're so surprised. Last year, FBS football, inside the opponent's 50, 2,140 times, a team had the ball third or fourth and one and less. Inside the 40, 743 times. Inside the red zone, 895 times. And I know you're going, hey, a team had it in the red zone at short, third and short, fourth and short, more times than outside the 40. You know what that tells me? There's a bunch of guys that are looking at fourth and one that are punting it outside the 40. There is that area. There is somewhere in there. It's like the break line. Mentally, that'd be kind of a fun research project, is where is that break line when teams stop going for fourth and one and start going for fourth and one inside an opponent's territory? So inside the 20, inside the 10, on the 1 yard line, 374 times last year, third and one or fourth and one on the one. And if you have to wait 10 seconds, it's one more tool taken out of the play caller's pocket. That could be one more tool taken out of your team's ability to score. And as we know in college football, most of the time, one touchdown is not going to make a lot of difference. There's tons and tons of blowouts. But if you're down 17-13 at home with 4 minutes left and it's third and one, you are not going to be able to come to the line and try to catch the other team off guard. They get 10 seconds to reset themselves every time. And that leads to the next page. Because while I was thinking about fourth and one on the goal line, my question is, what about substitutions? Because that was brought up that this gives a chance for substitutions. Well, flip over to the next page. And you'll see that from the edge of the coaching box to the dead middle of the field at the goal line is just under 40 yards. So 10 seconds. Imagine, fourth quarter, 4 minutes to go, third and one. Play just gets run. It's stuffed. They come to the line again. You got 10 seconds. Know what you have is you have 2 seconds as a coach to decide whether or not to substitute a defensive guy. He has 6 seconds to run a 40-yard dash without interference to that spot. Then he has 2 to 3 seconds at the most to catch his breath, understand the call, gather himself, and get set. Is that going to happen? Maybe this substitution idea, maybe it's between the 25s. Maybe it's between the 30s. Because then you have a shorter distance from the coaching box to that point on the field. But when you're talking 35, 40 yards and very big guys that may be winded already, fully padded, are they going to be able to make that run? So is there a modification potential to this rule if substitution is also the issue? Okay. We're going to shift up into fourth gear, finish this thing off. 2013, instead of looking at starts lost to injury, went a different approach. Looked at major injuries, season-ending injuries, SEIs as I call them in this, and pace of play, POP. So I wanted to look at the major injuries compared to the pace of play. A lot of people have been emailing me, texting me, tweeting me about, hey, compare these fast teams and the injuries they're causing and the slow teams and the injuries they're causing to these big guys on defense. So when you look at page 10, just a nice little reference, all the rankings of all 126 teams and their pace of play, their average pace of play during a football game throughout the 2013 season. And you look at page 11, I broke it down by all of FBS. And you can see the Big 12 and the Pac-12, still the fastest conferences in the country, even adding in these other components. Mountain West right there, Conference USA not too far behind. Boom, all the way down to the bottom, Sun Belt, SEC, the slowest pace of play in the country. You can look on average, the average number of snaps per minute last year in college football, 2.73 plays per minute. Now, I have a list of all of the reported players lost to season-ending injury. I have no idea when, how, why these happened. It just could have been anything. Just like I said before, we don't have the granular data to determine when, where, how, why, what play this happened. But we know these guys were out for the season. And here's the thing, 133,000 plays defensed
and 62 guys lost on the defensive line, defensive tackles, nose tackles, and defensive ends, to season-ending injuries. That is one guy every 2,400 plays on defense lost for the season. So no matter what you look at here, we are talking about a minuscule number. Not to diminish the injuries, because we all hate to see any of these guys go down with a major injury. But the bottom line is, it just doesn't happen that much. Now, when you look at the snaps seen by the defense, and then you look at the defensive line injuries lost per snap, it's easy to try to compare all of these things, but, you know, they're all very, very small numbers. You're talking 1 in 2,000 to 1 in 6,000. You know, look at the Mountain West. They lost two defensive linemen to season-ending injuries that were reported in 13,000 snaps. That's another interesting thing, though. Of the 62 guys lost to injury, only 15 were from the smaller-sized conferences, the smaller conferences. Now, I don't know, is that an anomaly? Is it a one-year thing? I have no idea, but I talked about earlier, size, speed, injuries, 15 of 62 were from those other conferences, which ran more plays overall, had a much lower season-ending injury rate per play than the Big Five conferences. And you go down, is it big guys? No, only 9 of those 62 guys were listed over 300 pounds, so it's not a big guy issue either. I think really what it comes down to is just simply it just doesn't happen that much, and even if we can pin it on an offensive scheme, whether it's hurry up, no huddle, or 3 yards in a cloud of dust, are we really going to be able to limit the injuries based on those schemes? That's up to you to decide. Now, what I did is I broke it down to the teams. I looked at the top 30 pace of play teams, the bottom 30 pace of play teams, the 66 in between all of that. Look at these numbers. The 30 fastest pace of play teams, 13 guys playing against them reported out for the season after playing against those 30 fastest pace of play teams. Almost 34,000 snaps faced. The 30 slowest, 29 plus thousand snaps faced, 13 guys. In fact, playing defense against the 30 fastest and the 30 slowest teams netted fewer season-ending injuries to defensive linemen on almost an equal number of snaps than playing the other 66 teams in between them. Look at the bye weeks. There was 9 defensive linemen reported out for the season during bye weeks. And even if you split those up amongst the 30 fastest, the slowest, and everybody else, they're just not big numbers. Look at the number on the far right. One season-ending injury for 2,600 snaps faced against the fastest pace of play teams. One season-ending injury per almost 2,300 snaps played against the slowest pace of play teams. And almost one season-ending injury versus everybody else, basically 2,600 snaps per season-ending injury. It's a small, small number. And I'm not seeing how speed, pace, whether it's slow or fast, is making a significant difference in injury rates per play for the big guys on defense. In the previous look at the 09 through 2012 data also suggests that no matter what scheme you run on offense, injury rates are about the same universally in college football. Look, it just comes down to, I think, one thing. The bigger you are, the faster you are, the harder you hit, the greater your chance for injury, period. But that's up for you to decide. If you're sitting here listening to me, coach, administrator, fan, player, whatever. Like I said, this isn't scientific. This doesn't prove or disprove anything. It is not statistically valid. But it is information. And part of what we do as fans, as humans, as anything, is to process information and make educated decisions on what could or could not be. In the end, the choice is up to you. The coolest thing about this is I got to share it. And I love to share information. I love to have fans think. That is one of the things that drives me through all of this, is being able to take whatever the heck is going on in my mind and being able to lay it out and let people read it, process it, and use it to become smarter college football fans. This is Dave Bartu, the CFB Matrix. Thank you for tuning in.